Okay, it's quarter two. Hopefully you had good lunch, enjoyed your lunch, and you're ready to collect more information, more interesting information. We're going to talk about implementing TFS, and we like to share some lessons learned which we collected over the migration within Siemens Healthcare. If I introduce myself, I am Thomas Dasch. I'm with Siemens Healthcare for, let's say, approximately 15 years in between. I'm heading the built-in integration team, and my recent task was to introduce the build and source control system of TFS for more than 1,000 users. And this is what this talk is all about. With me is Thomas Rümmler.
Well, my name is Thomas Rümmler. I work as an ALM consultant for German company AIT, and I'm a member of the AIT Team System Pro team. And in the project Syngo, which experiences this talk is all about, we supported Siemens as external consultants and gave advice in introducing and optimizing the Team Foundation server.
Okay, we split the talk into basically into five chapters. I'm starting with an introduction, what we are doing, what we are all about. We talk a little bit about the overall program setup, how you organize a TFS rollout. We talk about infrastructure, what do you need in the back end, how does it run, or what do you should you take care for. We will share some best practices about project management and backlog management, and we would share some best practices with build and version control. In the introduction, we are Syngo. Syngo is a twofold term. It's basically a business unit, a organization, and additionally a trademark and a product. And Syngo is the core for everything when it comes to medical imaging. So we are a platform, and one might compare it to an operating system, means everything which is needed by all the modalities is done by us, and the modalities do the specifics on top of our platform. And in combination, we build a common product. It's called Syngo Via, which comes later on. And in Syngo Via, we have more than 1,000 active developers currently. And on the left-hand side, you have all those modalities which take care to create medical images. But whenever you have images, you need to take care to enable the physician to read the images, to assess what is happening. And yeah, there are many dimensions to take care for it. Here on this figure, you see a CT image, and nowadays it is pretty easy to collect images without doing a surgery. So the physician can look into the body without needing to cut you off and to look inside your thing, which is pretty cool, which simplifies all our lives. And I would expect almost everybody was at least once in touch with one of the devices building medical images. Consider your wife, which brought birth to your child. She will be in contact with an ultrasound device, or if you have a broken leg, you will be in contact with an X-ray device, for instance. If you talk about Syngo, as I said, we are taking care for a medical product. Medical product means we are in a regulated environment, and additionally means we have the FDA behind us, which has huge requests about traceability, documentation, and so on. So you need to take care for certain things when you have to do a medical device. As mentioned already, we take care for a very, very large project. Means we have lots of developers, and by nature, those people are distributed all around the world. And due to this fact, you need to take care to organize communication. You need to share certain things. You need to take care that everybody's on the same line, and that everybody is going in the right direction. And due to the size, you have lots of dependencies internally, physically. You have dependencies between teams. You cannot simply implement a single feature. You need to organize it across the teams. Maybe if you would like to do a new application, you need to have a feature in a platform component, for instance. And all those kinds need to be organized. And to make it even more complex, we have products built on top of our platform which have their own life cycle, which reduces your flexibility in terms of API changes. You cannot simply change because there might be a couple of guys depending on your stuff. Imagine if the .NET framework guys would refactor the System.io namespace. This cannot simply be done. So you need to be careful, to be compatible, to not change what other guys are using. When you introduce a new development environment or ALM solution, you have to have a good partner on your side because you're not used to the new system. And in our case, we have a partner which supports us in creating a business case to figure out what are the expected benefits of the new solution. Can the new solution fulfill your expectations? And secondly, he might support you in process consulting. He might support you to say, please choose option one instead of option two. Comes to the same results, but the option one is the more efficient one. He also might support you in infrastructure questions, how to set up your backends. You can imagine that for running a huge environment, it's not just the default installation of TFS. You need to take care to have a SQL cluster behind it. You need to take care for some scalability, availability issues, and so on and so on. Furthermore, he can also support you when it comes to tool customization. It's not that we are running TFS out of the box. Yes, we customized it pretty much, and you can customize TFS at any place, at any scale you can imagine. And last but not least, it does not run very well. You will run into trouble at certain places. You have to have somebody who can tell you, this is the way how other customers did it, or even a contact person who might be the contact to the Microsoft product group in order to figure out why does certain things don't work as you expect them to work. Let's have a few insights in our program setup, how we set up the program, how we organize the TFS migration. First of all, our motivation. At the beginning, we had a huge set of coupled tools. You can imagine starting from a requirements engineering, a bug tracking, a source control system, a continuous integration tool, different set of tools, synchronization tools, which synchronize data from A to B, and so on, custom websites, custom reporting, a huge bunch of tools. Our goal was to reduce the amount, the sheer amount of tools, have a tighter integration, and due to this fact, to have also a saving in maintenance costs and in operation costs. But as always, whenever you introduce a new thing, you have to have in mind that you execute a change management process. You introduce no processes, no procedures, you require new know-how, and I would like to refer to Fearless Change of Linda Rising. This is a huge thing you have to have in mind. It's not just setting up a new system and you're done. You have to care for your people who are forced to work with the new system. As already said, we are started with a business case calculation, and I urgently ask you to do it as well if you're in the way to migrate to TFS, because it helps you to identify the benefits. How much benefits do you can have out of your planned approach? How much resources do you need? You can calculate project costs, and you can take it as an input to convince your management to say, okay, if we do it that way or that way, it costs us so much and we have this kind of return on invest. Furthermore, for us, it helped to get focus, because at the beginning, we started discussing a topic on the one hand side in one discipline, and after discussion, we ended in a totally different topic. And it's extremely difficult to narrow down your way of implementation, because if you start talking about builds, you quickly come up to, oh, I would like to trace certain things, et cetera, et cetera. And this helped us to get focus on our implementation, to say, oh, no, currently we are talking about this discipline. Let's talk about the different discipline at a later point in time. And basically, it's also the enabler for having a roadmap. Our product itself is organized to have a yearly release, a yearly major release. I do not mention all the hotfixes and service packs which come in between, but we have one release per year for our major product. And it is a good idea to align a rollout of a infrastructure or environment change with the product lifecycle. So it's a bad choice if you introduce a new source control system after you have passed the code freeze milestone, for instance. So you should not put additional risk to your development guys. Have it early in a project. Means we aligned all those rollouts with our project milestones. And yeah, we did it in phases. We did not everything at once. You require a couple of preparation time. And yeah, first of all, you require infrastructure. That's the first step. You cannot do it without the backends and all the servers installed. And then in parallel, we started doing some preparation work. If I talk about preparation, I mean thinking about how the concept should work, implementing a prototype, running with a small team, do a yeah, a first piloting with a small project, for instance. And once we say this has proven to be stable for our efforts, we said, okay, roll it out to the huge project. And this happened one thing in 1 year. We started with infrastructure, as mentioned already. And second thing was for us, introduce backlog management, because in this time we already did some kind of an agile migration. And we simply had no yeah, backlog management tool, and therefore we decided to go with TFS. And 1 year after, we took the built-in version control stuff, configuration management, to introduce. And currently we are in between to getting rolled out the test management stuff. And if I talk about test management, I mean test management in terms of regulatory needs. You need to have documents, you need to have traceability, you need to have formal requirements. Testing, execution of tests is already part of build. So the execution of automated tests is already part of configuration management, but all those formal aspects are part of test management in our talk. And change management is the topic about bug tracking. And as you already noted, we are a medical device, means we have no simple change management processes. You need to take care that change management is traceable, that you just introduce allowed changes to your product, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, now it comes to infrastructure, and I hand over to Thomas to give you more insights in the infrastructure.
Thank you, Thomas, for this introduction and overview about the program setup. Yes, as Thomas already mentioned, we started with infrastructure. And infrastructure, in that case, means, of course, on the, from the technical point of view, and on the other hand, to focus on organizational environment. This slide just gives you an idea about the size of the project and the challenges we face too. You can see Syngo, one of the columns here, in comparison with some data from Microsoft Team Project Collections and TFS. And you can see that the Syngo project can be classified as one of the largest Team Project Collections. In addition, the Syngo project we are talking today about is only one team project collection that is hosted on the infrastructure behind. That means there are many other team project collections as well. For example, for one team project collection for one product line. As I already mentioned, you have to take care of organizational environment. In small companies, of course, you can install TFS and one or a few people can manage all the TFS environment. But in a really large organization and environment with that huge amount of users, you can ask yourself which several disciplines are in there. And you need to define responsibilities. This is exactly what we've done here. For example, I wrote down here some key questions for you. And if you are in a situation in implementing Team Foundation Server in a large environment, you might answer them for you. Because if you have one infrastructure that is available for different departments or teams, you have to decide who maintains my build process templates, who gives support to the users, who defines my reports, or even who just manages my process templates. In such a situation, it might come to that situation that someone comes to you and asks for certain changes in a build process template, and you have to take care about the other teams. And that's the reason why you have to think about these organizational stuff as well. Also, there is a role and group management you have to think about. As the program setup already presented to you, we have a brownfield solution here. So there was an existing environment, an existing infrastructure, and we had to integrate the new ALM system, Team Foundation Server, into that existing environment. Of course, you can add some things in your structure, for example, with the user groups, but you are not completely free in designing them. And what we did here is to outsource the user administration into Active Directory. You can see in this left one here, this is some Active Directory groups, and on the right one also. And the left one is where the Team Foundation server gets operated. The right one is an example for the users. So that means the users, or the department of the users, can maintain their groups by their own without a need to ask the service provider in the own organization. This is like having an enterprise cloud, let me say, where you have the Team Foundation server in one department and you provide it to other ones and to other teams. The roles and groups leads us also to permissions. There are several things to take into account with permissions. One thing I want you to take away that you try to keep user management out of Team Foundation Server. Do it with, for example, with this Active Directory groups. You can define permissions on different levels. As you can see here, for example, on the Team Foundation Server instance level, on the Team Project Collection level, on the Team Project level, since the current version of Team Foundation Server on the team level as well. So we introduced Team Foundation Server 2010, but now you have the teams as well. And you have on the horizontal line also different stages. You have the Team Foundation Server, you have SharePoint, you have SQL Server reporting services, and you have to manage all the permissions in all of these systems. One issue we went in was in regard to the warehouse. Of course, you have different team project collections and different team projects, but all of this data comes together in the warehouse. And there is some special things with European and especially with German law, and this project was in Germany. There is a need to hide some user information. And that's why we introduced a new user in the warehouse. You can see here this anonymous. It's a new user in the warehouse which overrides the real usernames of TFS users so that the reports don't conflict with German laws. This was a beginning of implementing server-side logic, because the usage of this anonymous user was a server-side hook we implemented, and we used this technique also to implement some other things. If you think about large organizations, you think also about self-service. I think everyone knows if one is employed in a large organization and he wants to plan a travel or wants to have holidays or needs a rental car or just its address changes, he goes to a self-service portal and does those activities itself. Team Foundation Server doesn't provide this functionality out of the box. And that's the reason why we implemented just an ASP.NET website doing this. And one sample I can give you here is Team Project Collection. You see the screenshot? This is just the self-service portal. Creating a Team Project Collection is a very standardized task. And the teams can do it by their own without without the need of administrative rights. From the technical point of view, there is account impersonation in the background. And yeah, the teams can do this by their own. And this decreases administrators' efforts. The next step, as you remember this roadmap, after setting up an infrastructure, is introducing project management. This was the next thing we introduced, the backlog management. So in TFS terms, it's using the work items. When you begin using work items, it's obvious that you try to define or to model all states you have in the real life artifacts into the state machine of TFS. And if you do this, you get some state machines as you can see on the slide. Here are three examples for requirement, defect, and issue. All of these have different state machines. You might say, well, yes, that's very normal, and it is, but this comes to a problem from the usability point of view. If a user wanna define a query, in TFS it's called work item query, he is faced with a lot of different states with similar semantics behind. The work item editor in TFS, the work item query editor in TFS provides all the states available to the user. And in that case, in that example, on the right side you can see all these states of all the work items, and the user has to find out which are the right states. But he just want to know all the work items at a certain level or at a certain state. And what we did is we decided to implement a so-called single backlog item strategy, which means you have only one work item for planning purposes, and this work item has different subtypes to identify these different semantics behind. But there is one advantage I would like to point out here. If you use such a single backlog item strategy, you have a unified life cycle, which means you have easier work item queries. This technique ensures you to have one life cycle for all of these work items. The next thing is the work item queries. The usability for this work item queries is much better. It makes reporting easier, as you can see here in this chart. And the last thing I would like to mention is that it enables a kind of movement. If you have added a work item in TFS, it's hard to move it to another work item type. You can just copy and set the old one to a certain state, like terminated or something like that. And here you have the ability to move this work item. When implementing backlog management for a large organization with a huge amount of teams, it's also important to think about stability of your work item type definitions. And this brings us to the next slide. Please imagine we have different teams and all of them have little requirements on the different work item type definitions. One team says, well, I need another field one and another field two. And another team comes and, I need another three fields. And it is difficult to keep stability in the work item type definitions here. And we found out that most of this of these special little requirements is to enable these teams for to easier define their work item queries. And that's the reason why we added some tags into the work item type definitions. The newer process templates coming with Team Foundation Server 2012 also have tags. We had it in 2010 and for the reason of stability. Another issue we saw is roll up of planning data. It's also a thing. It's in parts solved in TFS 2012, but I think it's an obvious use case that you want to know all the effort for a requirement, which comes from an aggregation of the effort of all tasks below. And Team Foundation Server, at least 2010, out of the box, doesn't provide this functionality. And this is also a thing. We use the server-side hooks to do such server-side aggregation. In the work item, it's very simple implemented. The requirement work item just have an effort field, which is disabled for user input. It's just filled from the server side in the back end. This technique enables you to go beyond the limits of this client-side work item modifications provided by Team Foundation Server and then in Team Explorer in the work item visualization. Another thing we thought about is usability in the definition and visualization of work item of these work items, and we decided this two-column approach, which means we thought about what is description and what is planning, and this was added on the two sides, and I recommend also to find out which information is needed for in most of the use cases at the first glance. Because if you have found out these fields, you can place them on the top tabs and you can, the user need not to switch the tabs to get on this information. Also, from the usability point of view, we try to reduce header to an absolute minimum. The reason is quite simple. Of course, if you are sitting in front of your 26 inches monitor, this is not a problem. But if you're in the meeting room with a projector of, 1024 and so on pixels, it might be a hurdle to read this data, and that's why we try to explicitly reduce the height of the header. The last thing I would like to mention in regard to project management and especially using of work items with Team Foundation Server is that this can become a complex task, and even if it was not intended as that complex. And the reason for this is quite simple. If you imagine that you start with a process template, let me say a default process template shipped with Team Foundation Server, and you do some modifications on that template, you create a team project A. After that, you have some other modifications on the template, you create a team project B, and then you have further modifications. In that situation, you should be able to, on the one hand, deliberately decide whether some of these already created team projects shall be patched with this new features. And if you decide to do so, you should be able to do the patch without crashing the system. And the other thing is that you should be able to know which of your existing team projects are based on which version of your process template. And these things let us come to the conclusion here that modifying the process template is not just moving some text within an XML file. It's even in large organizations and large environments, it's more like a software development project. You have to take care about the requirements, the versions, maintaining user support and rollout. And you have to take care about all of these things. And the difficulty is that at the beginning, when you start using Team Foundation Server, you might not see all these complexity that come up with after a year or two. But you need to take care about it. And that's the point. I would like to hand over again to Thomas for the next topic.
Yeah, last but not least, I will share a couple of ideas, issues, lessons learned about build and version control. As you can imagine, 1,000 developers produce a huge code churn every day. It's not easy to handle this. And let's start with our starting point. 2 years ago, we were in ClearCase, and we had a huge ClearCase system, which developed over, let's say, roughly 10 to 15 years. And we had ClearCase with multi-site. We had a proprietary make-based build system, means there was no MS Build at all. We had tons of tools used to execute our build, and all those stuff needed to be transferred to the new system. If you think about a migration to a new source control system, everybody would say, oh yes, I would like to keep all my history. Please sync everything to my new system. After looking into the details, you very quickly recognize that this is simply not possible if your history exceeds a certain size, let's say. And therefore, we decided to keep the old thing, including maintenance of old versions within the old system, and the new version in the new system. New version TFS, old version still ClearCase. And during the migration, we decided to do a regular synchronization from ClearCase towards TFS in order to set up everything which is needed in TFS. As mentioned, we did not use MS Build, means we had studio projects but not maintained because it was a make-based system originally. And we figured out lots of things which simply did not work in the new system. And due to this regular syncs, we were able to make the compilation happen and to get things into TFS and to get a build within TFS. And the important thing is you have at any time just one active master system. Means during the migration, ClearCase was still the master system because you cannot shut down your development. that developers would like to continue developing. And at the migration point in time, we decided TFS is now the system. In the between, we had some thoughts to synchronize forth and back. And after looking more into the details, we simply figured out this is almost not possible in that huge size. Because in ClearCase, we also had not a branch-based approach, more a label-based approach, means we had no real branching concept available. Therefore, we said, old thing, ClearCase, and from time point X on, everything is in TFS. And the last stuff comes from ClearCase towards TFS. Important is how you organize your sources. Originally, we had our sources aligned along namespaces. This caused the fact that we did not recognize where are our targets, what are our component boundaries, because there might be some namespaces which overlap. And we used the chance to do some kind of a source reorganization within the new system. We used the migration to transition our source structure into a new alignment. Now we align along components. We name it bundles. Means component is an architectural thing. It's a cohesive thing, and everything belonging to a component is part of that component. There are no source references outside to that component. And it is important to know you have to follow your architecture, not your organization. We had lots of teams which asked for us to say, oh, I am a new team, I would like to have a component team XYZ. No, it's not the case, because at least at Siemens, I would say we adapt our organization once a year, and our architecture is much more stable than our organization. So source control reflects architecture and has to be stable. You do not like to change the source structure when you introduce a new team or so. Each component should be self-contained, means everything which is needed for the component is inside the component. And if you leave the boundary outside the component, then our decision is everything is binary based. This allows you to move components around the world. You can say, okay, keep it in that branch. No, move it out. I would like to have it in our own life cycle, in our own build, and you don't need to change anything. You just pick the folder, including everything, move it out, you're done. Second thing is, how do you organize branching? Some might ask, is there a silver bullet how to do branching? No, there isn't. Take a look to the branching guide at CodePlex, and you have to figure it out on your own. So use branches wisely. We use branches to scale our development, to isolate development efforts, and to apply quality gates to branches. And my lessons learned is, please avoid to have deep branch hierarchies, because every branch comes with cost. Every branch has a build. You need to maintain a build. Every build requires hardware. Every build requires a person who looks on the build result. Every branch requires merges to the parent branch. Every branch requires forward integration from the parent branch, etc., etc. So every branch causes effort. Therefore, use branches wisely. Even if it is easy to create a branch, first think about it. Is it really needed? Do you really need a branch, or simply to isolate certain things? As I already said, the components themselves are isolated to other components, but as a matter of fact, no component can exist without other components. So, for instance, every component would need the .NET framework. Every or a couple of components might require certain third-party software. Or a component in the application layer requires some components from the service layer, for instance. And because if you have a huge system, you automatically have long build cycles, and you don't like to force your developer to say, oh, simply compile the whole branch, just takes a day, and then you have the things compiled, you need to look for a different solution. And a second thing which brought us to an idea of how to handle dependency management was that our system is that huge that we cannot compile it with MS Build with one single solution, because MS Build explodes with out of memory. to compile that huge code base. Therefore, we decided to implement something like Maven. It's a dependency management system where you defined, you can't read it maybe in the handouts. Each component defines its dependencies to other component. Means component X says, I am requiring the enterprise library 5.0. I am requiring a different third party tool 2.0. I am requiring my internal component 1.5. And the dependency management system takes care to bring all those dependencies to within your workspace. You just right-click within Studio, we added a Studio add-in, and say download dependencies, and then this tool takes care to copy all the dependent binaries to within your workspace. And this avoids the developer to compile everything. We already talked about branches. When we talk about branches, we can also think about quality gates. We came to the conclusion that it's a good idea to stage quality gates. The teams are applying certain quality gates on their own team or feature branches. They have multiple builds, so this is just a simplified figure. So this one single box does not necessarily mean it's a single build. Maybe they have a continuous integration build or a gated check-in in combination with a rolling build, in combination with a nightly build, etc. But at a certain point in time, those changes of the teams leave the team. And when the changes leave the team, they come to system integration, and system integration is one single gate for everybody within our whole system. So nobody can bypass system integration. You execute a well-defined quality gate before you can pass to main. And originally, we thought, well, it's a good idea to be some kind of, yeah, let's say, I always name it CM-driven, to do as much as possible before the developer checks in. After having TFS, we changed our minds because it's a good thing to use TFS as a feedback system. TFS provides you feedback. You can run a TFS build, which quickly provides feedback to say, okay, all my tests are green. And in the past, we said, you can only check in code if you have a past code review. Now we changed our minds. We apply the same gates, but at a later point in time. We say, if you leave the team, please have a code review applied. Means we check the code review within system integration, not within the developer check-in. Means the teams can use the system efficiently, they can use it for feedback. Nonetheless, we apply the same rules and being as safe as before, but much more efficient. After we have passed this, the integration, we do the main build, we do the packaging, and we run more enhanced tests by our system test team. They run performance tests, stability tests, more functional tests, a huge regression suite, etc., etc. On the left-hand side, it's not that dramatic because if you have a bug, it does not really care because nobody sees the bug. So only your team or you are kicked out of system integration, but it's limited in terms of scope. If you have reached the mainline, then everybody will be affected by your change and everybody runs into trouble. Means that we have to take care within this last gate to decide, is it a critical thing? And if it is critical, we stop the line. We means no thing will be introduced to main until this thing has been fixed. Or if it is not so critical, if it's just a non-conformity, we just put it to the backlog for the teams that they fix it at a later point in time. If I talk about integration, you have to have some kind of a balance. You need to take care for either optimizing for speed or for quality. And integration itself is a balance between those two things. If you optimize for speed, your gate would be not good enough. If you optimize for quality, you have infinite life build cycles. It's not an option. Therefore, you need to have some kind of a trade-off, a balance between both of them. And in terms of testing, you can on the one hand side say, oh, I like to execute a full test with every check-in, but in our case, this takes a matter of roughly 200 hours or so to execute all the tests. Would not scale for many users. And we have lots of integration tests, and I guess everybody agrees that fast feedback is absolutely mandatory. So you cannot neglect fast feedback. You need to have fast feedback. Means in terms of build, we decided to have a the small XML snippet to attach each and every target with a definition, it's called target spec in our case, where we define the associated tests. And the build takes care to figure out which targets have been changed, what are the associated tests, and only those tests are getting executed in the build. Yes, it's some kind of a static model, and you might ask, why don't you use these automated impact analysis of TFS itself? Yeah, the impact analysis just works for managed code pretty well. We have a mixed environment. We have C++, we have ASP.NET, we have managed code, we have a little of Silverlight, we have tons of XML. Does not work very well. Therefore, we decided to have a static model which works pretty well. So we optimize on the one hand side to decide reduce the amount of stuff executed during the build. And on the second side, which is already available, but I guess not recognized by lots of you, we make use of the stuff which is available with the lab management. We execute directly out of the build. We attach the test controller, which distributes our tests to multiple machines. It's not a difficult task, it's pretty easy. And in this case, you can simply scale out your test execution. You can run the tests on multiple machines, and I already mentioned system integration. System integration runs on 10 machines, and with every check-in, we run roughly 10 hours test execution time within 1 hour of real time. Yeah, I like to quote Brian Hurry. Brian Hurry mentioned roughly 1 year ago to say, you cannot simulate a production system. And he's absolutely true. We did piloting, we did some tests, we did, we run it in small projects, but nonetheless, we figured out many pieces impact our system. At the very beginning, we struggled with the infrastructure itself. We figured out that if the network is not that robust, your build will kick out. So the build is not that reliable that it can overcome certain network drops. We also figured out that the warehouse was running on our up tier, and at certain points in time, it caused that much load that the up tier was not busy anymore, or was not responsive anymore. So therefore, we decided to move the warehouse stuff out of the up tier to our own dedicated hardware to not impact the system. Furthermore, we figured out if you execute many, many, many builds, and we are executing, let's say, 2,000 to 3,000 builds per month, roughly, then you have so much load on your up tiers that the developers cannot work anymore. And therefore, you have to have proxies in place, and we had proxies in place, but unfortunately, you need to be very careful to have the right proxy settings within the users and the build machines as well. So you have to take care that the Internet Explorer proxy settings are set it right, otherwise the TFS proxy won't work. Yeah, if you have a stable infrastructure, then you come to the next level. You will figure out, if you do lots of customization in TeamBuild, you run into trouble which you introduced on yourself, but we also had certain trouble with MS Build, where we had wrong ordering of compile execution, which broke us certain builds. With the test environment, we introduced NUnit and some kind of an NUnit adapter, which is available now with Visual Studio 2012, but we had already an adapter with some non-official APIs, I would say, based on Studio 2010. And this adapter and this integration caused also some kinds of trouble. And once you have your environment available, you can take care for your product and tests. And if your tests are not reliable, your build will also fail. So you have to have in mind that all those four pieces are very important when it comes to quality and speed. As a summary, I would say, in terms of version control, TFS 2010 scales very well, even for large teams. You can customize it wherever you need it, so the options to do your, to reflect your own processes are available. It does not work out of the box. You need to take care to do certain adaptations that it can run your own development shop. We required a couple of workarounds to make our build running, so to work around the MS Build bugs I just mentioned, etc. But nonetheless, it's pretty easy to learn and to operate. Nonetheless, there are a couple of issues, and some of them are already addressed with TFS 2012, and we did not do the migration yet. We are planning for it. And yeah, a few of them are left for the next version. For instance, what did we had? We have such a huge version control history that the warehouse adapter, the source control adapter, is not able to execute our data. So we simply needed to disable the source control adapter out of the warehouse. Otherwise, we would have exploded the warehouse. Let's do a quick wrap-up.
Yes, summarizing all the things we explained before results in this, high-level wrap-up. We can recommend, based on our experiences, that timing is an important factor. We decided to synchronize to the release cycles. Obviously, it's not a very good idea to implement new processes and new tools short before the code freeze of a team. The next thing, slicing. You have seen at the very beginning of this talk these steps, these phases of the rollout plan. All these topics comes with a certain effort, and you need to organize this, for example, as we did in kind of steps. And from the administration point of view, also important for us is to maintain the users out of Team Foundation Server. Just use Team Foundation Server with its role model, but the whole user management shall be out of the tool.
Yeah, customization. It's easy to extend and to adapt, but do it only where needed. So first of all, think about, do I really need to have this extension, or do I try to doing it wrong? Maybe TFS itself has a better solution for the same thing. Balancing, take care or find the right balance between your process requirements and the usability. So we took pretty much emphasis on usability. Thomas showed some kind of the work item template. For sure, you can have hundreds of checkboxes within the work item template, which appear at the very front for each developer, but 99% of your developers won't need that much information. They just like to have the description of your backlog item, maybe the acceptance criteria. Everything else should be at a different place. So this should not appear to the developers. The same was true for the small headers. And tailoring, you should define your implementation diligently, because have in mind that you can do everything, almost everything, with TFS, but do not do too much. So take care, where do you customize? How do you set up your processes? I would say most often less is more. Okay, so far to our talk. Do you have some questions?
How big of a team was it that was working on the rollout, mm-hmm. and then how big of a team is it that's administering it now?
The question was about the team size at the beginning and the team size mm-hmm. nowadays.
Okay, I can talk about the source control stuff. To get all the source control stuff running, we had a core team of 7 people. Who did it, and during the rollout, we have chosen the so-called champions approach. Means we trained, or we were in deeper contact with one person out of each team. This person acted some kind of multiplier within to the team, and this person had good contacts to the core team. And operating is this system from the backend. Point of view, it's 2 persons who drive the backend, and for sure the build lab is a whole team. So it's a whole team taking care for all those stuff.
You said you're analyzing your migration to 2012 now. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular areas that you're seeing as real problem areas? Anything related to your existing customizations? How's that coming?
Yeah. No, 2010 runs pretty well. 2012 has a couple of new features which are interesting for us. Thomas mentioned this automation services in the backend. And with 2010, the automation service always updates your work item, and you enter a work item, save it, the automation service runs in behind, and then you did an additional change, you cannot update it, and 2012 is able to do partial updates, which is able to do a merge. Same is true for source control. For source control, our pain in the ass is this 260 char limit of the source control passes. And the new update one would allow us to have 400 chars. And there was a second question.
Well, you've updated, you customized your templates in 2010. Mm-hmm. Have you had any problems migrating those templates into 2012?
No, it's not that difficult. So in between, we are pretty used to customizing the things. So it's not difficult. In the front.
When you do your migration, do you do a migration in place? So like you load 2012 on top of your 2010? Or do you create a separate 2012 when you migrate your data?
We did not decide yet. So, but my gut feeling is that we are taking the first one, migrate in place, because we have a huge infrastructure, huge environment, and we cannot duplicate the servers. So we cannot simply set up TFS 2012 in parallel and then move everything over to this thing. That's something on the right. Yeah.
Well, let me repeat it. So, when you're migrating from 2010 to 2012, did you find any issues with permissions when you have multiple permissions at the collection, the project, and even the file level?
We haven't reached that point currently. So, till now, we haven't had any problems. But I cannot say this really well because we didn't focus on this permission level in regard to the migration until now.
Thanks.
Yeah, as far as the requests you might get to modify the template, how do you determine what changes to make and what changes not to make?
Yeah, I think there is no really pattern or a handbook you can look inside. It's just you have to know your processes very well, and you have to know things about usability, and you have to list the requirements of all your teams and find out if a certain requirement comes from several sites. And in that case, you might decide more to implement a certain modification or to not to implement it. In the front.
When you're modifying like a process template of a work item template, like you're adding a property, so how do you set it up? So do you provide like default value or something like this?
It depends, because it depends on whether it is a optional field or an obligatory field or not. And if you have to fill out the field and you add it after the first rollout, it might be a good idea to have a default value which enables the users not to think about the new value when just opening the work item, adding a certain field, another one, and trying to save it. Yeah. And this is a case where a default value is really helpful.
How did you manage when you need to put a person in all projects that you have in your collection? Did you build a AD group and then put this AD group in all projects? How did you manage this?
These Active Directory groups are also a tree of groups. So what you have seen on the slide was the central pool of groups on the side of the department that operates Team Foundation Server, and the other side was the teams using Team Foundation Server. And of course, there are different levels where you can add users, and of course, there are some administrative groups having more access and access to more projects or collections than other ones. But from the idea behind it, basically, it is intended that the teams itself adds their users to their Active Directory groups, and they get automatically access to these three systems I mentioned before.
We have one here, and then we'll go back there.
Where do we go to find out more about the work item field aggregation that you talked about?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's just a field which is disabled for user input. And on the back end, Team Foundation Server provides the ability to create some hooks into the system. There are two ways to do this. On the one hand, you can do this scheduled, and on the other hand, you can do this event-driven. This aggregation is used to do event-driven, because the saving of a work item creates the update of the aggregated value. And that's it.
But one note from my side, keep in mind, server-side extension is active for the whole collection. So you cannot distinguish, or you have to distinguish in code. You cannot say, keep it active here, not there. It's active everywhere. And if you do it worse in your coding, you will kick out the up tier.
Okay, we have one more question up here.
In your testing efforts, do your virtual machines already have the system pre-installed, or do you have an active build deploy test scenario where the system gets installed on demand and then actually test it?
Yeah. Our product has a nice feature. It's called RSFA, Run Syngo from Archive. Means we can run, or we can more or less have some kind of an Xcopy deployment with a set of scripts to run the system without having it installed. So we have both. On the one hand side, we run the application directly on a developer workplace, as well on our test agent. And on the other hand, we are also creating automated installers and run the installation automatically. So it's both.
I'm going to say thank you to Thomas and Thomas. There's obviously a lot of passion around the Syngo implementation at Siemens. I've seen how much there is at Erlangen, so thank you very much. You'll be around at the conference, so please continue around the espresso stand. There's a 15-minute break now and then another set of sessions. If you're in particular interested, Tracy Truen and Victor Mishkaten are doing a view of what's happening with System Center SP1 and VS Ultimate and TFS in the DevOps track in the next session, which may be of interest to many of you for shortening MTTR in case that's not obvious in the program. So thank you very much, Thomas and Thomas.
In case of any further questions, don't hesitate to contact us via email or here on the conference.
And use the time here. Thanks.